everybody. This is Armand Demel with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Finally back with you. Back with you after having had a month of other things that we've been doing. So with you with this positive mind, listen, today we're going to be talking about living with pain. A recent article in the New York Times activated a thought about pain. And just thinking about pain is a part of life. You know, if you're 15 years old and 14 years old and 12 years old, pain is not a part of your life. So as I addressed the question today, Jonna Valerio, who's with me today. Hey, Jonna, welcome being in the studio.
Thank you for having me, Armand.
Sure. Jonna came up with a bunch of questions, and she said, let's take a look at this. And I said, okay, so help me with it and do it with me today. And so Jonna's going to be helping me look at this issue of pain. Pain. What a funny word, you know, for the positive mind. How do you have pain and be a positive mind? I know people who live in misery. Absolute broken misery and have a positive mind. I know that. How do they do that? What's the trick? Are they numb or are these people who are really in physical pain? Pain. Especially pain that won't go away. It changes a person. You know that? And not always for the better. I mean, almost never for the better does it change a person, because the initial reaction to serious pain, the first reaction when you get serious pain is fear. And then you ask, what's wrong with me? Is it curable? But then pain that fails to respond to treatment can lead to so many things like anxiety, depression, anger, and irritability. Treatment. We're going to have to talk about treatment. The New York Times talked about it. Age 29, Walter, a computer programmer in Silicon Valley, developed a repetitive stress injury that caused severe pain in his hands when he touched the keyboard. So the pain became worse, spreading to his shoulders, his neck, his back. And he eventually became unable to lift, to work, to carry, to squeeze. At age 29, he wound up on Social Security disability, basically confined to his house, and his life seemed to be over, he said. In a book, Living with Chronic Pain, by Jennifer Schneider, he became seriously depressed, and he considered suicide. Of course you do. Imagine if you had pain that you just couldn't get rid of. Well, we're going to start off by talking about physical pain, because there's also emotional pain that you can't get rid of. You just can't get rid of it. But pain is an invisible subjective symptom. Now, that's very important. The body of a chronic pain sufferer, someone, for example, with fibromyalgia or back pain, usually appears intact. They look like they're intact. They're going along, right? And there's no objective test to detect pain. You know, the trouble with your dogs and cats, I look at my cat sometimes and I wonder, is he okay? Because he can't tell me when he's in pain. He can only meow. But if he's in pain, it's hard to tell because he can't communicate it. Well, most people try to communicate it, but it's very hard because it's subjective. My sense of pain is different than your sense of pain. There are no objective tests to detect pain or measure its intensity. You have to just take a person's word for it, because what's pain to you may not be pain to me. You know, I'm kind of numb. You hit me, in the arm and break my arm, and maybe I'll get by. Whereas another person might be screaming in agony. So its pain is subjective, and it doesn't make it any better or worse if you feel it or don't feel it. You just do. Nearly 10% of the people in the United States suffer from moderate to severe chronic pain, and the prevalence increases with age. Of course. This is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. Jonna Valerio and I are going to help you take this journey through pain and all its ramifications. And you're going to find out, we're going to come out of the tunnel at the end with a light, as we always do. Complete relief from chronic pain is rare, even with the best treatments, you know. People who have, who misunderstand the effects of narcotics are often reluctant to use drugs like opiates. They can relieve the pain, but then, you know what happens with opiates? You become immune, you know, you need more and more. It's like all drugs to get through the thing, pain. Why does pain persist? And this is a big question. The problem with chronic pain is that it never really ends and does not always respond to treatment. If the pain initially was caused by an injury or an illness, it can persist long after the injury has healed or the illness has been defeated because permanent changes have occurred in the body. Pain causes the change in the body. So let's say, for example, you had a head injury, and I know somebody who was once mugged. Subsequently, she had severe migraines. Is it possible that the original mugging, which was being hit over the head, created some kind of pain syndrome that even though she might have gotten over the concussion that she might have suffered, is that possibly a manifestation of that thing? Yes, it's possible. It can persist long after, you know, it's healed. A guy named Mark Grant, a psychologist in Australia who specializes in managing chronic pain, said that physical injury equals pain is overly simplistic. You never know that pain is caused and maintained by a combination of physical, psychological, and neurological factors. Now, this thing about the psychological, neurological factors we're going to be going into in a little bit with you, because it's really important for you to understand for yourself, for your children, for your mate, for people you love who are in pain, and for your dog and cat. Poor cat. Never tell you they're in pain till, you know, it's really late. Now, chronic pain can be caused by muscle tension. You know, muscle tension itself changes circulation, postural imbalances do it, psychological distress, neurological changes, hormonal changes can cause pain. Ouch. It's also known that unrelieved pain is associated with increased metabolic rate, spontaneous excitation of the central nervous system, changes in blood circulation, and changes in the limbic hypothalamic system. So let me tell you about my experience, my personal experience with morphine. Morphine. Interesting drug, morphine. Morphine is a drug that's one of the opiates, and it mimics the endorphins. It kind of like, we have endorphins, which are these natural painkillers, and when you take morphine, it kind of shuts down the body, and it says to the body, that's it, you're covered, you got enough endorphins, you have enough painkiller. I had once an extreme pain, and they gave me a shot of morphine, and something happened, my brain cleared. I felt like I was smarter than I ever was before, and I wondered why. And here's what happened. Most of the time, it seems that we all are walking around with our body on some kind of guard against pain. Like you may have small pains that you walk around with that you don't even know you do. And then your body's on guard with pain. And it's on guard and it says, you know, I've got to be careful, got to block this pain and block that pain, and you better not walk this way. And if you got a bad wrist and you got arthritis in your wrist, don't lift up that thing, don't turn it, don't use instruments, stuff like that. You're on guard against pain. When you took morphine or when a person takes morphine, the mind says, that's it, there is no more pain, no chance of pain, you're free of potential pain. And there's a tremendous relief, a euphoric relief that you feel when that happens, which made me understand why people like opium, why people like heroin, from this one experience that I had. It's amazing to feel free of the potential pain, and it has a lot to do with why people become drug addicts. So there are two kinds of pain, and this you should know about, right? One is called nociceptive pain. It arises from injury to muscles, tendons, and ligaments, or in the internal organs. Nociceptive. N-O-C-I-C-E-P-T-I-V-E. Undamaged nerve cells respond to an injury outside themselves. They transmit the pain signals to the spinal cord and to the brain. But these come from muscle pain, tendon pain, ligament pain, or internal organ damage. How can you have internal organ damage? Oh, there's lots of it. You know, you liver damage, any of those. That kind of pain, you know, it goes to the spinal cord, and then it goes back. The resulting pain is usually described as deep and throbbing. So when the doctor asks you, is it a deep and throbbing pain, or is it a sharp pain? He's trying to find out the path that it takes. Examples include chronic lower back pain, arthritis, fibromyalgia, migraines, interstitial cystitis, pelvic pain. These are things, right? Okay. The second type of pain, that's the one kind, right? Nociceptive. The other one is called neuropathic pain. And this results from abnormal nerve function or direct damage to a nerve. So you have nerve pain and you have muscle pain. Two kinds. Very important. Neuropathic pain, shingles, neuropathy, sympathetic dystrophy, phantom limb syndrome, which we'll talk about, spinal stenosis, Parkinson's disease, spinal cord injury, multiple sclerosis, sharp pains because these are damaged nerve fibers. Do you ever have a bad sciatica? Oof. Right? It'll make you scream. And then it goes away. Fair, sharp pain, not the deep throbbing pain. Sometimes you could have both. Specifically, in migraine, you get both. You know, you get the deep throbbing pain and then the shooting, like somebody puts a knife through your head. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. You should understand this, my friends. If you understand this, it's going to make your attitude towards life better because you're going to understand yourself in pain. And we're all, pain is part of life. Now, the damaged nerve fibers with neuropathic pain can fire spontaneously both at the site of an injury and or any place along the nerve pathway. So if you have neural pain, very often you could feel the pain somewhere along the pathway. It's called referred pain. It doesn't mean you're going to feel it at the site. So if you have pain in your fingertip, it could be that you have something wrong with your elbow. You know, you just can't really tell exactly where the location is when it's nerve pain. And it feels like either burning, shooting, stabbing, or sometimes it radiates, you know. And it feels terrible. It's often worse at night. Sometimes it has intense tingling or intense itching. Itching is a form of pain. Do you ever think about it, you know, itching like crazy when you just, you can't stop itching? That's a pain. It's a form of pain, and it's saying there's something wrong with you, with your nerve. You know, the nerve is there, pins and needles, something wrong. Okay. So some chronic pain syndromes, like we said, have both the nociceptive and the neuropathic pain, like migraine. A common example is sciatica, which will do it as well. And this is it. This is just the beginning. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. You know, Jana, when you brought this to me and you said, let's talk about it, I know you knew some people who were in this pain syndrome. I was fascinated by it, and the more research I did on it, the more I found that I really am not aware of all the dynamics.
Well, the question I'd like to ask you, Armand, is, so after you've just given us all this great information, does pain always mean that there's something wrong then?
Well, John, it's a good question because there's something, you know, there's this thing about there's something wrong, like death is nature's way of telling you that you're not doing too well, you know. Is pain nature's way of telling you something's wrong? Pain has traditionally been considered a signal of physical injury. The warning type of pain is called acute pain. I never thought it was so cute. Chronic pain refers to pain that continues along the normal healing time or after the normal healing time. And when the injury seems to have been healed. I've had that experience. Have you had that experience? You know, something goes wrong and then it hurts even after it's okay. Now imagine what happens. You go to a doctor and you said, oh, it's killing me. And the doctor says, but it's all fine. He thinks it's in your mind. But we've learned that chronic pain can be caused by a number of things as a response to having had a damage. So pain can be caused by many things, and chronic pain in particular cannot be understood in terms of a simple straight line. Physical injury equals pain. Chronic pain is not always what it appears to be. Sometimes pain is labeled chronic when it's lasted a long time and nobody can figure out what it is. And when they can't figure out what it is, they call it chronic pain. It just means undiagnosed. Doesn't necessarily mean pain. Sometimes they figure it out. They say, hey, you know, you got a pebble in your shoe. And that's what's causing that pain that's radiating up your leg. At the end of the day, you have to decide what pain means based on a combination of medical advice and your own opinions and your own perception. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something broken inside you. It could mean something was broken. It could mean something is a warning, you know, or it could mean that there is some damage.
And so it can be psychological then. And then it can turn into something psychological then. If you go to your doctor and the doctor says, no, you're fine, then it could turn into something psychological then.
What does that mean? It could turn into something psychological.
Well, if your body is programmed to believe or gets used to the pain, then it turns into something else. Perhaps it morphs into something else.
Well, you see, now there's a good question, Jana, because the minute we say it's psychological, we assume it's not real. You know? And this is a problem. Although we can now know that pain is caused and maintained by a combination of physical, psychological, and neurological factors, many people continue to act as if it could be understood only in the physical pathway. Okay, let's give an example. You're at war. You know, you're in a foxhole. There's a bomb falling all around you. There's a machine gun happening. Your buddy is wounded. You're trying to take care of your friend. You get shot in the arm. You don't even know it. You don't know it. You go, you drag yourself away from your foxhole. You get to a certain place where you're safe. The minute you get there, then you feel the pain. What happened to the pain? Was the pain not there? Did you block it in your mind? Do you have that ability? And does pain that does not seem to have a physical evidence, is that psychological pain? Is it all in your head? Rarely is physical pain just in the head psychologically without some neurological component, but we've learned recently that there is nothing that's in the head without neurological components. So I don't think there is any such thing as imagined. Well, that's not true. There is imagined pain. That's another story, but most pain is not imagined. Most pain is real.
What about pain being good for your character? I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous, but many people act as though it were true.
There used to be a thing, if it doesn't kill you, you know,
right,
it'll make you stronger. I'm not so sure. As ridiculous as it sounds, many people act as if it's true. Pain sufferers do this by not complaining about pain, by persisting with behaviors that only aggravate their pain, and by ignoring signs that their pain is inadequately controlled. So instead of doing something about it, people believe they're stronger because they go through it. Treating specialists do this by withholding effective medication or encouraging activities that unduly aggravate the pain. And sometimes the doctors will do this. They'll hold back your pain medication and they'll want you to just go through it, believing it's going to build you. Chronic pain sufferers are more likely to suffer from depression, suicidal thoughts, trauma, and a range of other psychological symptoms. Unrelieved chronic pain is soul-destroying, not character-building. And even though I do think that some people can brave, some people who are afraid of all pain, you know, Jana, there are some people who avoid every inch of pain and need to be able to feel things, especially emotional pain. I think going through chronic pain for a long period of time when it's not necessary, I think it'll kill your soul. I really do, and I've watched that happen with people.
So complaining about pain is not a sign of weakness. Some people think that it might be a sign of weakness, but if you complain about pain, if you acknowledge it, it's a way to overcome it, isn't it? If you express it and acknowledge it, you can overcome it.
Sure. You answered it.
Right.
No. I take it back. No, I don't think so. If you go to a hospital, and if you go to a hospital and you're a nurse on a ward in a hospital where there are not privileged people, you know, you got four people, six people to a room, and you listen to people ringing the bell, you know, and they're calling you and saying, nurse, I'm feeling pain, nurse, I'm feeling pain, nurse, I'm feeling pain. Something happens, you know, to a person, to a nurse, when they're listening to a person crying about pain. I've been in a hospital or two where I've been, you know, trying to get somebody to pay attention to me, and you don't get the attention. So now what do? You exaggerate the pain. In other words, you focus on the pain. You've got nothing else to do with your time. So now the nurse has to find out, who is she going to take care of? Is she going to take care of the one with the worst pain or the one with the least pain? And who has the real pain? Who doesn't have the real pain? So if you're somebody who never complains, and then you complain, she'll tend to go to you. So what people do in hospitals is they try not to complain, because they know if they complain too much, they're going to get ignored. That's a funny thing about our hospital system. But it's not true. Many cultures see the ability to withstand pain as a sign of strength. But it is better to complain about it. The ability would certainly have had survival value in warlike societies. You know, don't complain. Many animals, when they get wounded, they don't want to show they're wounded. So people, you know, they kind of keep quiet with it. That makes sense. And a lot of people are being afraid of being labeled as a complainer or weak. Not reporting pain can lead to poor management of the injury, as well as increasing the likelihood of chronic pain and depression. Pain can only be overcome if it's acknowledged and expressed. So if you have somebody who says, I feel this extraordinary pain and I don't know what to do, get them to a doctor. Get them to somebody who understands. It doesn't have to be a physician. Get them to somebody who understands the pain. Complain about it if you feel it. Because if you're hurting, you know, living with that hurt is okay, but it's not ideal.
Do doctors get annoyed at people if they're asking too many questions? Sometimes you get the feeling when you go to your doctor, you're putting them out, or you're annoying them if you ask a lot of questions about your condition.
You know, it's a funny thing, physicians. I don't know what's happened to them. You know, you and I know it. We know one in common. He's a good guy, right? He's a good guy. He tries his very best. But they're beyond complaints. I often wonder about the oncologist. You know, I mean, here are people screaming, talking to somebody, saying, help me, help me. And he's saying, well, we're doing the best we can. I would imagine he would shed a tear at some point over somebody in pain, but they get immune. So the physician gets immune to the complaint about pain, and then the physician thinks you don't know what you're talking about. They especially don't think that you've done your research. If you've done adequate research and you go walking in with some documentation, they actually have a name for it. I forget what it's called, but it's something like person with documents, and it means pain in the butt. Because, you know, they don't want to be questioned. Yet there are physicians I've met who, when I go to them with some of the information that I've dug up about medical conditions, they respect it because they know me. You know, they know, oh, Armand wouldn't be saying this unless he had researched it thoroughly. So do doctors resent the questions? Yes. They don't want to be bothered with you. And I wish you could find another doctor. You know, in other words, I wish there were other physicians around. But according to the current medical system, you have very little choice. And they listen to you, and they listen to you almost as if thinking to themselves, I wish they would finish talking so I could get on to my next four-minute consultation. You know, they go from room to room. Not all physicians. I don't mean to say I disrespect all physicians, but most, I think, don't give people what they need. And I understand the way the system is. I mean, do you understand in America now, Jana, dentists net more money than physicians? Dentists make more money because their malpractice is not as big. And it's like they're trying their best, these physicians. They're not trying their best. They're just trying to keep their heads above water. And by doing that, they've had to not provide the services anymore. So these pain specialists, these doctors who are pain specialists, have kind of lost their empathy. They've lost, if I were a physician and somebody came into me and it was a little girl who was screaming in pain because of some kind of internal organ damage, I'd cry. You know, I'd cry as I looked. But what happens? When do you stop crying? When do you stop feeling it? So I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think the physicians don't want you to, but I'll tell you, I do think that it is, if you organize your thoughts when you go to them, if you really organize your thoughts, if you bring them like a list, everybody who goes to a physician should have a list of all the medications that they have taken now and have taken over the last 5 years. And they should have a list, and it should be typed out, and it should be straight, because it's one of the questions all the doctors ask you, right? What are your medications? You should also have a list of any surgeries you've had, a list of them. You go into your doctor with an organized list, and the doctor feels better. You know, he takes you more seriously. It's not, especially if it's printed and typed, you know. I mean, it's a kind of a funny thing how well they respond to looking at it. And you see, oh, they have a document with all of your medications listed on it. What a good thing. So show the doctor, show the physician that you can organize your thought. Show him that you can have some sense of organized thought when you bring it to him. Don't bring him 100 different articles. Don't bring him papers all over the place. Try to bring him simple questions, and I think they'll respond better. And if they don't, fire them. You could fire your doctor. I think it's a great word to say to some physicians, you know. You're fired. Say it to your shrink, you're fired. You know, it's a good thing to get that little Trump moment.
Well, that's interesting, Armand. I mean, do you think that so for physicians, do you think that there's an answer for all chronic pain?
Do you think physicians have an answer for all chronic? No.
No.
No, they don't know what they're doing. They try. You know, there's an answer to some. What you want to do as a physician is give somebody the minimal medication to conquer the pain. You really would rather give somebody Darvon than Percocet. You'd rather give them, some minor thing rather than a big thing, because you know the consequences. That's on one hand. On the other hand, you don't want to give them stuff that, you know, if they're going to keep coming back and complaining to you, so you kind of want to knock them out. And then comes this other problem which is the state asking you to account for everything you prescribe nowadays. So now they have to, if they give you a real painkiller, you know, they have to write out a form. So they don't want to give it to you, so they want to give you aspirin. I knew of a man who had cancer. He was dying. He was next door to me where I was living. And he was dying. He was in cancer, and he was maybe in his last week. They would not give him a serious painkiller. They gave him aspirin. Why? He's dying. They're afraid of addicting him. But because it meant that they had to fill out too many forms and track every bit of the medication. It's kind of an interesting thing. We're going to take some of your calls, too, when we get back. Just that you should know, you know, you don't have to live with pain. There are few exceptions, but there's no need for anybody to have to live with unbearable pain nowadays. Don't give up. Don't over-medicate it. There are a whole bunch of things that are out there that are possible. You have a right to get as much relief as you want from your physical pain. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some steps to overcoming chronic pain, and we're going to be also talking about psychological pain when we get back from our break. We're going to take a short break, play you some beautiful music, and be right back. play that because she sounds like she's in pain. You know, Abi Balish, Natasha Atlas. The other day I was listening to some music and I thought I had this incredibly intense, dramatic, emotional expression being done by the person who was singing about something, and I was sure they were singing about a lost love, and it turned out they were singing about what a nice day it is outside. So, you know, culturally things are really different. Pain must be real different culturally, you know. It must be different between cultures, what it's like understanding a person who lives with pain all the time. And how much room do you give a person who's, well, we're going to talk about how to communicate with that. We're talking about physical pain at first. In the studio with me, Jana Valerio, who's helping me out with this today.
I imagine when a loved one is in pain or is very sick that you have mixed feelings about it, that you sometimes have mixed feelings about it.
You know, it's amazing, Jana. When somebody you love is in chronic pain, you got to get angry. You know, you feel angry because he gets in your way on one way. Is that what you mean by the mixed feelings?
Yeah, you get angry at them or you
resent
them.
And you love them deeply. What a mixture of feelings. You have such deep love. And then such resentment of the illness, not of them. But then they feel your resentment of them. And imagine what it's like to have chronic pain and know somebody hates you for having the chronic pain because you're interfering with their life. So let's say you're married and you're young and you get some kind of chronic pain and your life stops. Hey, we thought we were going to go to that party, but I can't because, you know, my back is acting up. How do you deal with that? Well, you know, love is a huge, huge thing that embraces pain. And I have seen where there is true love and deep love between people, that when the person loves someone, they have room for the fact that they resent it and they're angry. You know, sometimes I wish they would both put the pain. Let's say you had a chronic pain of some kind of, you know, liver damage or something, and you had it and you put it on a pillow and the two of you hauled off and got mad at it. You know, it's like you have a right to get angry at it. But the trouble with getting angry at your pain is it gets even with you. It doesn't like you to get angry with it because you stress against it and then it kind of comes back twice as hard. So somehow, if you love somebody who has got the pain, you got to take a different approach, which we'll talk about later. But yes, definitely mixed feelings, definitely mixed. If you're taking care of a mother who's dying of something, definitely mixed feelings.
Do you think it's important to push past your pain and exercise or do physical activity? When you're in pain, just push past, like ignore the pain.
No, I think that's a mistake. I think it's something that people do unless the following scenario. I know a lazy guy. He's lazy. He doesn't like to exercise. He has to exercise because he's got a condition that's not going to get any better unless he exercises. So he uses his pain as an excuse not to exercise because he's lazy. In that case, you got to push past it. Now, also during exercise, you know, when you're building endurance or you're trying to build aerobics, you got to push past your discomfort. So there are cases where pushing past pain works, but mostly it's not to ignore it. It's to know what you're doing and to go past it. You certainly don't want to take somebody who's got arthritis of their wrists and have them push through it by lifting barbells. You know, that's not going to help the situation. It's not going to make it better over time. But there are ten steps in overcoming chronic pain. One is make sure you understand what kind of problem pain really is. Chronic pain is different than other medical problems. understand that, you have to meet the struggle of this concept of pain. Understand what it is. It can be treated relatively easily. Chronic pain is a complex illness. It's caused and maintained by a combination of factors, psychological, neurological. The multiple causes make it difficult to pinpoint the reason. So make sure you understand what kind of problem pain is as opposed to other problems. Number two is acceptance. Chronic pain is so awful that sometimes it's easier to accept, escape into wishing it had never happened or hoping for a miracle cure. But accepting that it exists, accepting. And what happens is supposedly with acceptance, you wind up with reduced pain, a sense of inner peace, less anxiety, better coping. And I know some people with chronic migraine who work with acceptance and have been able to get fewer and fewer pain, less pain over time, and they don't medicate it right away, they accept it. The trick, especially with migraine, is not to medicate, is to not medicate as much as they would tell you to do, because the medication becomes almost addictive.
So you're saying that you could build up your resistance somewhat if you just let your body try to fight it a little bit first.
Yes, try to bring yourself to the edge. Don't take just the easy way out, especially when it comes around to understanding pain medications. Have a good working relationship with your doctor. Now, this is very difficult. The only thing you could do is marry him. If you don't marry your doctor, you're not going to have a good working relationship with them. Let's say you pay your doctor $1 million a visit. They have these things called concierge doctors. Did you ever hear of those?
No.
Concierge doctor. It's the opposite of the managed care doctor. Concierge doctor is a doctor who takes on only 4 or 5 patients, you being one of them. You pay him something like $100,000 a year to be on call for you all the time. He comes to you as much as possible. And the concierge doctor's job is to make sure you stay in the best physical health and from the least amount of pain. And he's going to take care of you. That's a concierge doctor. That's what the wealthy folks do. That's what they do. It's concierge doctoring. It's the opposite. But trying to have a good working relationship with a doctor is very difficult because you have to manipulate them. Because doctors are not psychologically the most sound people in the world. So you can't be a pain in the butt. You especially can't be a pain in the butt to the secretaries who work on the assistants who work around. You can't be yelling at them. You can't be screaming at them. They will just diss you. They will get rid of you. Understand that somebody who sits in an oncologist's office who answers the phone is going to get screamed at all the time. And she's not going to take it, and she'll misplace your message. Doctors do not want to be yelled at and screamed at, and they don't want to be accused. They don't want that. You have to try to do whatever you do with them with some sense of calm. And that's how you develop a good working relationship with your doctor. It doesn't mean you have to be completely passive, but you have to kind of encourage them to join you in this search. And many physicians won't do it. They just won't do it. You're a pain. They want the easy one. They want the one who comes in, they can give the prescription to and pass them on. A doctor-patient relationship is a two-way street. You depend on them, and they have too many of you looking for help. Too many. So I think that it's a good relationship with your doctor is important. Also, it's very important, Jana, never to ignore pain. In the treatment of chronic pain, it's become fashionable to recommend ignoring pain in the belief that it's only pain and there's nothing really physically wrong. No, pain should not be ignored. If you got a pain, check it out. Have a balanced approach to physical activity. Sometimes when you're in pain, you want to be still and you want to do absolutely nothing. And I think it's important that you keep somehow moving. The temptation is to lay in bed and just crawl under the covers. But the circulation doesn't want you to do it. You're going to recover better if you could somehow get yourself up. Not an easy thing to do. Sleep is important. Loss of sleep, is creates additional pain and more pain sensitivity. So if you could do something to sleep, whatever it is that puts you to sleep, helps you sleep better and sleep longer, that helps usually with the pain. Making sure you have adequate support is also important. Make sure there are people around you who help take care of you. And don't expect people who don't have your pain to know what it's like. They just don't. You cannot tell somebody. It's like a knife going through my head. How many people have knives going through their head? You know what that's like. I feel a sharp pain. If you're a physician and you hear sharp pain, you know neurological pain, you know what that's like. But when you try to describe it to someone, they just can't get it. And forgive yourself. Forgive yourself, my friends. The lost ability to work, the lost ability to love, the lost ability to play, caused by chronic pain, can create feelings of guilt and failure. Become aware of this, you know? I mean, you were given this thing. Repressed feelings of shame around having chronic pain lead to resentment. Later emerges as anger. Feeling guilty becomes, you know, a kind of form of self-indulgence. It allows you to engage in this self-blame. Forgiveness, letting go of guilt, will be easier if you choose a proactive approach by adapting this concept. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind, with John Valerio. You know, we're talking about chronic pain. What about if you have somebody who is suffering from chronic pain? What do you do? Here's 10 tips for communicating with a person suffering from chronic pain. Number one, listen. To really listen is the most helpful thing you can do for a person in pain. Listening also involves more than just hearing what's being said. A good listener listens with your heart as well as your ears. You're able to read between the lines and interpret unspoken nonverbal pain communications. To be a good listener, my friends, you have to focus your attention completely on the person you're speaking to and listen to them and listen to how they're saying what they're saying as well as what they're saying. Now, you know, it gets rough because you get tired of hearing the same old thing. But turn around. Turn around to the person you love and listen. Listen like you're listening for nuance.
Armand, I remember when we had Andrew Solomon on the show, and he was talking about his depression, and he said the one thing that you can help with the most if you're a friend who's trying to, or if your loved one is suffering, is to not leave, is to just stay. Even if you're not talking, even if you're not being very active, just stay there for them, because it does, it helps in a way.
Yes, you know, but sometimes, John, the difficulty of it is you're staying, and even though they're depressed or they're in physical pain, you're dying on the inside, too, because you're not moving. So it's somehow you have to balance yourself. When you're there, be there. And when you need to take a break, take a break. You know, make sure your friend is covered. The second thing is don't fake it. It can be unpleasant to listen to someone talk about their pain. Don't ask someone how they're feeling unless you're prepared to listen. However, it's better to really listen for just 5 minutes than to pretend. You don't have to have all the answers. People can tell you if you're not really interested, and people can tell when you're not really interested. It makes them feel like they're a burden. I've done it myself. I've listened to people who were talking about, and I'm not really there. And they know. And all of us, you know, could be tired or whatever it is, and you just get tired. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Number three, understand that pain sufferers could be afraid to say how they're feeling. Many chronic pain sufferers are silent about their pain because of fear of ridicule or feeling of what's the point, or just thinking they don't want to talk about it, they don't want to get advice from you, they don't want you to tell them what's doing. Be careful with advice. Don't give advice. Just listen. Such a tendency that I have, and men that I know men have, to fix the problem. So a person comes to you and says, oh, I have this chronic pain, and it's terrible pain. Why don't you take a walk? Why don't you? And just give advice. And the advice is not coming from the best place. Understand that it's so important to listen and to hear and to be heard. Look for nonverbal cues. As indicated, chronic pain sufferers often underreport their pain, you know, but sleep disturbance, difficulty concentrating, suicidal thoughts, you know, you could do anything at all that you could do to help a person sleep, whatever it is that they need, do it for them. It really helps a great deal. Believe people when they say they're in pain. Don't distrust them. Believe it. Believe it. You know that old joke about why you don't have sex with your husband. You know, I have a headache. I can't have sex with you. No, believe it. Pain sufferers complain about their pain. They're often not believed. People don't believe them. Because somehow people use it as excuses, or you grew up with people using it as excuses. Asking helpful questions is another way to help a person. Helpful questions are specific, and they ask a person to rate their pain on a scale of 1 to 10. I know a man who lives with someone who has chronic pain, and he asks her, and she talks to him in numbers. He looks at her and he says, oh, you got a 6 3/4 today. And she says, no, it's more like an 8. And he says, now I see it's an 8. And you actually get that. You know, you could actually talk in numbers of intensity. But you want more information than that. Avoid words that maim. And now it's very, very careful, being very careful about the words. Words are powerful two-edged swords. They can maim or heal. Thoughtless throwaway lines such as, you know, you'll have to live with it, or, you know, you're just so selfish, stuff like that. When a person is feeling terrible, it goes right through to their soul. It's so brutal. It's so brutal. It really calls on you to do something better. Elementary psychology teaches you that fear is an important way to motivate constructive behavior. Don't try to motivate somebody through fear. Constructive, carefully chosen words in the context of a caring relationship is great in activating the healing process.
I mean, Armand, if you're with your partner and they're suffering, what are some of the carefully chosen words you would say to them? If someone you loved was suffering, what would you say to them?
You know, I don't know if there is carefully chosen words that I could say a general, but I would say, I hear what you're saying. Could you explain it to me? Oh, I'm so sorry. Really felt, because, you know, you have to feel it back to say it. Have compassion. It's a very important part. You know, try and put aside your cares and preoccupations, even just for a few minutes, and begin with an open heart. Compassion is known to be the one most healing of human emotions. In the essay, you know, Anatole Breuillard wrote, I wouldn't demand a lot of my doctor's time. I just wish he would brood on my situation for perhaps 5 minutes. And that would give his whole mind just once. If he would give me his mind just once, be bonded with me for a brief space, survey my soul as well as my flesh to get at my illness. For each man is ill in his own way. Without such recognition, I am nothing but my illness, said Anatole Breuillard. And that's really kind of interesting, because when you think about, you know, you think about like what I do in consultations, and these consultations that I do that you see people coming in for, they get my attention for 45 minutes. And you could just see people are not used to being attended to for 45 minutes. Give a person your attention without your tension. Your attention meaning give them, pay attention, be with them as best you can. And be honest about the limitations of your knowledge. Be honest when you say to somebody you love, I can't help. I wish I could. And they'll say to you, take my pain away, take my pain away. And say, oh, I love you, darling, but I can't. I'm sorry. And don't be afraid of your own tears. As somebody who lives with somebody who's in great physical pain, don't be afraid, because you're going to feel tears when you look at somebody you care about in deep pain. Let yourself feel those pains. You know, I don't even have to be people I care about. That I know personally. I'll see people who come to me for consultations and I'll weep just looking at what they went through. Or I'll visit somebody in a hospital and I imagine what they're going through. So be willing to feel the feelings that come up when you are with somebody. So that's the best we could do. You know, I see we're running out of time, and I wish we had more time, Jana, for phone calls, but we don't today. Today is a special day, and I hope that this is helpful, especially to the people who wrote in asking about helping to deal with this. I will be, again, my special thanks to Jana Valerio for being with me. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with a special guest, Dolly Levinson. Dolly Showman from Philadelphia should be phoning in with us and being with us on the air. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to send me an email, it's armand@brainlink.com. Jana, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Armand. Thank you.